Hey guys, thanks for tuning us in for this 29th episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests for this episode include Oklahoma State Senator Brent Howard. Melissa Rivers will be talking about her group text podcast. Susie Ragsdale will visit. She's been a lifelong backup singer, also from a famous family, and has new music and a video now available. We also visit with our good friend, country singer James Robert Webb, just up the highway a piece up in Tulsa. He's got new music and a new single, Good Time Waiting to Happen. We'll also visit with Aaron and Rachel Bradshaw about the new series on E!, Bradshaw Bunch. You can check that out Thursdays, 9 Eastern, 8 local time. And finally, we'll visit with writer and comedian and activist Bruce Valanche. We'll visit with him as we wrap up the program. If you would, please take time to subscribe, drop a like, comment, leave some feedback, and please be sure and share with your friends. Up first is our good friend, Oklahoma State Senator Brent Howard. He's going to tell us how things are looking in Oklahoma City and nationwide and how those affect us here in Southwest Oklahoma. First off, Brent, good to see you, my friend.
Good morning, Cameron.
It's
great fall morning out there.
It has been beautiful. 90 degrees. Some places 90 is bad, but 90 degrees here is just that's a good fall day.
You know, as a wheat farmer, though, I would sure take a rain right now. So
you could take a drink, right?
I could. Yeah.
Now the we continue on moving through 2020, and I don't know if you're looking as forward to 2021 to not have to write 2020 anymore, but obviously next session coming up and a lot of information out there, but a big day tomorrow as well. We've got a big election next month and a big date tomorrow.
Yes. So thank you for bringing that up. That's tomorrow is going to be the last day to register if you want to vote in the November 3rd election. So in Oklahoma, we have a little bit more of a registration process. I know some states allow you to register on the day of and get a provisional ballot, but we have basically a month beforehand, and so that date is tomorrow. So if you want to vote, get to the county election board, or you can stop by, I believe, the library, the Republican Party here in Altus. A few different places have
tag offices. Is that somewhere else you can sign up?
Might depend on the tag some agency. But a lot of public buildings would have those, just voter registration cards, and then you can get those. But they need to be into the election office by tomorrow.
That's right. Now, Brent, what number-wise of the registration on voters, do you have any idea what percentage of actually registered voters we have as opposed to actual population?
Well, actually, just was reading that this morning. We're up to about 2.2 million people that are registered in the state of Oklahoma. And projection on the census is we're going to have about 4 million people in the state.
Wow.
And, you know, that would be roughly 55%. But you have to take into account not everybody that's in the state is eligible to vote. You've got everybody that's under 18, which should be somewhere around 750 to 800,000 of the population. And then you've got convicted felons and, and some other things. So actual registered voters in the state, just kind of go off the top of my head on that, based on those numbers, we probably have somewhere around 75 to 80% of eligible voters are actually registered.
That's better than I expected.
Yeah. Now, people that actually vote is the other part of that. And normally we get somewhere between 35 to 40% whenever we're talking about presidential election of eligible voters actually vote.
And talk about the importance of casting that vote as well.
Well, it's your voice in the government, and everybody focuses on the presidential election. I mean, that takes up all the air out of the room. But ultimately, the more local you get, the more your vote actually counts. And so, whenever you're talking about voting for the county commissioner, for instance, that's 1/3 of our county. So roughly one vote out of 8,000 gets the say in that, versus whenever you're talking about presidential election, you're one vote out of 330 million people. And so really being able to cast your vote for those local politicians or whoever's running, and then being able to converse with them. So we are democracy based, which means that, talk to your representative, cast your vote, have your say.
Mm-hmm. And as we talk going into next session, a lot of things on the top priority list and money and numbers. I know money is one of the big stressors in life, and I know it's got to be that way in the legislature as well, right?
No different for the state. We are a balanced budget state, which requires that everything that we spend, we have to have the actual physical money mm-hmm. either coming in for that year or on hand to be able to spend. Talked a little bit last year, we had about a $7.8 billion budget that we appropriated. Of that, we had to pull about $700 million out of rainy day fund, revenue stabilization, or other time one-time fund spending. As we're going into this next year, the projected revenue for last year was $7.1 billion. I think we're probably going to be pretty flat on that. So actual income is going to be $7.1 billion. We might see an increase because the fiscal year for the state actually starts on July 1st. And I do think that we're going to have probably vaccine. We're going to have a lot more things open up by then. And hopefully we'll see a little bit of more increase in oil prices. So that projection might move up a little. But ultimately, that's kind of the numbers that we're looking at. So if we're our one-time fund availability now, whereas we came into 2020 with about a $1.1 billion set aside rainy day revenue stabilization, we're sitting at about $235 million right now. So again, we spent $700 million of one-time funds. We've only got $235 available. We're going to be looking at cuts unless there's really a big increase in where those revenues come from. And then the other thing is we're going to have increased spending that's going to have to come in place. So budget's not really looking good. The biggest portion of that increased spending is going to be on the Medicaid expansion. With layoffs, with everything that's kind of gone on, Medicaid expansion population's probably going to be significantly larger than what all the proposals were. You know, initial scoring and some of the people that were pushing the vote on that was around $130 million as an annual cost. Mm-hmm. The projections that I'm looking at and have heard about are going to be at least $180 million mm-hmm. and possibly as high as about $310 million. Wow. So whenever we're talking about that money's going to have to be spent every year because that's in the Constitution. So we're really starting behind the eight ball on this. Ultimately, I think we're looking at somewhere around a $1 billion to a $1.1 billion shortfall before anything really comes in.
And that's not just pocket change.
That's not.
That's a lot of zeros. How many zeros is that? Is that 12 zeros?
No, not nine, boy, it wouldn't nine? Quite be. Let's see. Six, it'd be, yeah, nine, one right? Followed by nine zeros.
Okay, all right. That's a lot of zeros.
That is.
That's a lot of zeros. Now, along with the budget lines, you talked about some increases, but you're also going to have to make some cuts. Where do those cuts come? Where are the words that the constituents, where are they saying those cuts should come from?
Really haven't heard from many constituents yet. These numbers were just preliminary coming in. Okay. Talked with budget chair yesterday, and so that's kind of what it's not really a surprise, but really didn't have those numbers. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I forgot to mention was Oklahoma Tax Commission. With the Supreme Court's McGirt decision, mm-hmm. Oklahoma Tax Commission just released a report earlier this month that said that you know, sovereign nation that they determined for the Creek mm-hmm. tribe, Creek Nation, could ultimately affect up to about $200 million a year in income tax and sales tax that comes into the state. So if that gets applied to all five of the tribes that are eastern Oklahoma, you know, that's less revenue that we're going to mm-hmm. have coming in. What we're looking at right now, so we cut about $400 million out of spending last year, mm-hmm. and that was around a 4 to 5% cut across the board for all agencies. That's probably what we'll look at. Just being honest, there's a lot of agencies and a lot of departments that get bigger portions of where spending comes in. And so even if we do across the board education, whenever we're talking about K through 12, public education, common education receives about 38% of our state appropriated budget. Mm-hmm. And so a 4% cut to 38% is obviously going to be a lot more than whenever you're talking about mental health services, mm-hmm. which might only receive about, I think they receive 6 to 7%, so mm-hmm. a 4% cut there. Still going to be the same percentage,
right.
But just less the number.
Effect on the number, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, as we move forward, also, I was looking at the Midwest Consumer Index. I mean, those come out each week, and it seems like the Consumer Index and also the Confidence Index continue going up. Unemployment's still going down. Where are we at? Are people still seeing confidence in the future is what I guess I'm asking.
I think so. If you keep your head out of the news and don't just get buried in what's going on and all the fighting going on at the national level, I think ultimately people are getting more comfortable with where we're at, and then also have a lot more availability. Mm-hmm. So as you're looking at, all around here, we're pretty much open. Have some friends still in D.C., and things are just now starting to open back up. Mm-hmm. Restaurants were completely closed down. So look out your back window, and I think that you can feel a lot better about what's going on. Ultimately, our unemployment rate continues to fall, which is a good thing. I think people need a purpose. Mm-hmm. And so going out, and that's probably more beneficial for mental health and outlook, really, than just the money aspect of it.
That's right. That's right. And I know we've talked about this before, and Quartz Mountain got some exciting news about that as well.
Yes. So Representative Ortega and I were able to sponsor bills that move Quartz Mountain back over to tourism. Mm-hmm. It had been under the Regents for Higher Education, which, had good aspects of it. It allowed us to have a local board because it was set up kind of as an educational institution. The bad part of that is that the Regents are a constitutional authority, so they have we have no say in what their budgeting is. And over the past 20 years, their actual per dollar expenditure has gone down by about $1.1 million on average for what they get appropriated. Again, legislature had no say in that because mm-hmm. We can only appropriate to the state regents for higher education, and then allocation was 100% up to theirs. Okay. So as of October 1st, the bill went into effect, and Quartz Mountain is under tourism. So we were able to spend a little bit of money on there. We've got about $3 million that's going to go into capital improvement projects, as well as we increased their appropriation by about $350,000 from what they received from last year. So you should see some changes going on. There's going to be a new executive director. The one that had been over at Steed, Great Plains State mm-hmm. Park, has moved into Quartz Mountain. And so he's got, if you've been over there, just everything kept up well. Of course, he's had the support on it, too. Mm-hmm. So that's nothing against our previous executive directors. They just haven't had the funding.
Right.
But now that we've got that in place, I think you're going to see a lot of increases in maintenance, actual upkeep. Mm-hmm. And then we're actually going to start doing a lot of renovations on the actual Quartz Mountain Lodge, which is going to be, again, a gym, and hopefully bring in a lot more conferences and a lot more revenue and tourism right. to this part of the state. With that, Quartz Mountain right now is not under a pay-to-park, but I do anticipate that it will go into that. State parks now can charge mm-hmm. $7, or you can buy an annual pass that will cover every park for $60. But the provision of that is that that park that collects that money is the only one where that revenue gets spent.
Okay.
So if you go up, and I believe the lodge will be exempt because you'd be paying for the room and, mm-hmm. and or just going into the restaurant. But if you want to use the actual state park facilities, then that's where that $7. And then just the parks that have actually been receiving this since June 1st or mm-hmm. July 1st have just had phenomenal success in where they've been able to reinvest that and make improvements within the park. So I'm really thinking that we're going to see quite a bit come through Quartz Mountain in the near future.
Well, that's good news. And again, Brent, if folks have questions, would like more information, email still the best?
Yeah, have been going up to the Capitol to be able to answer phones, but that's still just about one day a week. Mm-hmm. So you won't catch me much up there. But if you do call in 405-521-5612, messages can be given to me. again, that's just kind of transcribed or summary. Mm-hmm. So if you want a full story or full details, email me at brent.howard@oksenate.gov, and I'll be able to respond to those directly.
All right. Well, Brent, always good to visit with you and keeping us updated. Sometimes good news, sometimes it's just the news we need to hear.
Sometimes it's just news.
That's right. Well, Brent, have a great rest of your month, and we'll talk to you in November.
All right.
That's hard to believe, isn't it?
Thank you, Cameron.
Had the opportunity to visit earlier this morning with Melissa Rivers. We talked about her new group text podcast. Always good to have our friends back on the air. Going to talk about a new podcast, or actually a podcast that's been up and running for a while. Group text with Melissa Rivers, and who else to have than Melissa on the line this morning. And Melissa, always great to visit with you.
Nice to hear your voice.
and Melissa, this I was telling you, you've delved into the podcasting thing. And what has this podcast meant to you personally?
I love doing it. I so enjoy it, and every week is anchored by whatever day we're taping. And it has helped keep me sane through all of this, because at least I have some sort of a creative outlet.
and having the friends that you have to be able to come in and show their support as well, to be a part of that podcast, what's that mean as far as those relationships that you've got as well?
It's amazing. And, you know, I feel like I've made some new friends out of it. And it's super special.
And I know there's you guys talk on all kinds of different subjects. I know that Love Quarantine Style was one of the episodes that kind of stuck out to me. And where do you reach for those topics?
You know, we have a great group of friends, and we talk about everything. And I literally ask, what do you want to talk about?
And who's the one that got you into the podcasting in the first place? And were you originally excited about it or a little bit hesitant originally?
I was super hesitant, but I have great friends that, you know, convinced me that it was a really good idea and a really good outlet for me.
And what are maybe some of the upcoming episodes that folks can look forward to as well?
I'm just finishing up my sort of mini series on comedy, where I talk to people like Jeff Ross and Bob Saget and Margaret Cho and Dion Cole about, are we going to be able to laugh again? And then I also do something, you know, I also just did one with a dermatologist about what should we be doing at home so we don't look like, you know, a night, like, you know, Friday the 13th and need a when we come out of quarantine.
And along with that, I mean, is there a line where you draw the line, we're not going to go there, or is it just kind of a wide open variety of topics?
It's a wide open variety of topics. You know, we try and make it fun and interesting and informative, and we try and stay out of the political lane.
That's one of the tricks in podcasting, is if they have the politics on them, it's an instant passover, because it's heavy enough out there anyway, isn't it, Melissa?
Oh, my God. I'm so tired of turning on the TV and having, you know, people screaming.
And it's both sides. Neither side likes each other just as much as the other. So well, we just ought to move along, let them vote, and whatever happens, happens. But I know you guys touch some sensitive subjects as well. And does that make it a little uncomfortable, or are you excited to share those as well?
I think you have to do the uncomfortable as well as the comfortable. You know, I think that's how you get interesting conversation.
And who has had the biggest influence on your delivery style? I know your mom had to have a huge impact on your life. And do you still hear her voice leading you along as you're doing the show as well?
I mean, that's a good question. You know, I hear her voice in my head all the time, to the point where I want to turn her and be like, shut up already.
Yeah, you can't turn her off anymore, can you?
No, I can't. There's no channel to change.
That is awesome. Now, Melissa, where can folks, I want to make sure they can not only follow the podcast, but social media, everywhere they can find more information about what you got going on.
Absolutely. Sorry, someone was just asking me a question. It's someone who works for me's birthday, and I'm trying to get her out of the room so I can get her gift out of the closet as we're talking. You can find me on every single, you know, platform.
And that is, again, the group text with Melissa Rivers. And Melissa, it's always great to visit with you. I'm looking forward to finishing the show so I can check out some more of the episodes. And hopefully we can catch up again real soon.
Thank you. And hopefully I'll figure out where I hid that damn birthday gift.
Melissa, have a great rest of your week.
Thank you.
And our next guest, Susie Ragsdale on the line, and this is actually going to be my first introduction to Susie, so we will all get to know Susie a little bit better today, and artist, musician as well, Susie Ragsdale, nice to visit with you today, and thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate getting to be heard by people that are not just right in my vicinity. I've been doing little local things, but great to be on the radio out in Oklahoma.
and Susie, I guess the obvious question right off the bat is where did music first start for you?
Oh, well, I was born to a musical father who's a singer, songwriter, comedian. His name is Ray Stevens. And he, by the time I was born, he had started having some success. And then I and my older sister and her second grade class, while I was in kindergarten, we sang Jesus Loves the Little Children on the front end of Everything is Beautiful in 1970, which went on to win a Grammy for him. And I kind of loved being in the studio and hearing myself back on a record. So it was a done deal by that point.
Now, did you go through those teen years as a rebellious teen, or even into the 20s that you were like, you know, Dad did his music thing, I'm going to try something different? Was that, did you have those times as well?
You know, I think I wasn't really rebelling. I was just liking different things other than, you know, like I listened to and memorized every record my dad made up until I was a teenager. And then I got into Elvis Costello and Van Morrison and, oh gosh, Heart, you know, the sisters, all sorts of Graham Parker, all sorts of cool stuff that, you know, maybe my father wouldn't necessarily be identifying with. But he always gave everything a chance as far as how good is the writing and how good is the production and the singing. So it wasn't really like any kind of argument thing. I just spent a few years not really paying attention to what my father was putting out. And I guess that's the sort of the growing up, getting away from the nest kind of thing that everybody does.
And you dropped the video for Live Until You Die. And tell our listeners a little bit about Live Until You Die, and also the new album, Ghost Town, that's arriving this month as well.
Okay, yeah. Well, the video, I had written that song a year or two ago, well, more than two now, because I had still lived in the city when I wrote it. And when I was making this EP, Ghost Town, with the producer that Sam Frank, who came over from London to put it together with me, we chose the six best songs of all, like maybe 24 I had sent him, to make it all sort of hang together. And we thought that one was a good comic relief sort of thing. I mean, talking about dying doesn't sound funny, but it's a kind of a funny song as far as I'm concerned. And then while he was at my house recording for a month, it was from Valentine's until March 16th. During that time, the pandemic hit, and the lyrics to Live Until You Die sort of took on a new meaning for everybody that heard it. Like, oh, wow, perfect pandemic song, you know, because what can you do? You're in quarantine. Eat, drink, sleep, wash, rinse, repeat, and wait for something to change, you know.
And for you, did the meaning for you change as well as a result of what everybody's going through right now?
Yeah. I mean, I saw how it was more topical than when I was just bitching and moaning about how life is hard, but it's better than dying. It was more like people can empathize better when everybody's having a hard time, not just me.
And where do you get the basis for your songwriting? I mean, is it the everyday life, or and who has inspired the creative process in your brain as well?
Well, I think probably my father first. You know, he's a good writer, he's a good producer, he's a good arranger, singer, better piano player than I will ever be. And, you know, I grew up with that in my house. So there was him. And then I think Carole King had a big influence on my writing. I never would think that I'm that good, but she sure did make me want to be that good. And all the other writers, like Elvis Costello, what a way with words. And sometimes, you know, so many words, you don't even know what he's talking about. But usually it's entertaining regardless, you know. And, yeah, that was a lot of my writing. Oh, gosh, the Beatles, the Eagles, a lot of writers. And then all the reading I did, not only of just fiction, but of poetry. The Southern Agrarian? Yeah, is that how you say it? Poet. Like Flannery O'Connor and Eudora Welty and all those people I learned of in high school and really enjoyed poetry and literature better than every other course in school except for philosophy. That was a real fun one, too.
Now,
like intro to philosophy.
You talked about being in the city and now out and alone, out in nature. Does that help the creative process for you, or do you find yourself dealing with writer's block more because of not seeing as many things, if you will?
Well, no, you know, I think it's a lot of really good space to think and meditate and reflect, and I still get to town every now and then, like I'm here now to talk with you. I've got some friends that put on our masks and get socially distantly apart, but talk to each other and hang out. I even do like a lot of Zoom yoga classes where it's in real time and you're actually talking with your friends and exercising with your friends. So I think the country has been, it's a real creative kind of space out there. Everyone that visits me, of course, it's a great place to visit, first of all, because there's so much room with 6.5 acres. You don't need to get close to anybody to come say hello. So, but everybody that comes out there just wants to hang out and be creative and, you know, listen to music or play music. It's just a beautiful little paradise out there.
And Susie, if folks want to find out more information about the video, also about the album that's coming out on the 9th, where would folks find more information about that?
Well, there's I've got SusieRagsdale.com, and you spell my name SusieRagsdale.com. And I've been posting things on there since we started putting the record together. I've got actually 3 videos from this EP. There's Wildflowers, there's Live Until You Die, and then just yesterday we premiered one for a song called The Ending, which is maybe my favorite song on the record. I don't know. Like, it kind of floats around. But yeah, SusieRagsdale.com, and then there's a YouTube channel where you can watch not only those videos, but videos from the past, cooking videos. I don't think I have any yoga videos up, but I've got yoga poses and recipes on my website, and all sorts of kind of lifestyle, cooking, yoga, and music, maybe in reverse order.
And something stuck out to me. You talked about, you know, the song, your favorite, being changing from day to day. Is that the kind of the way, like, doing the vocalizations that you've done before, the backing vocals, were some of the more popular ones maybe not as close to your heart as well?
Oh, well, I've been lucky to have been hired to sing with some great singers and getting to do backgrounds with Guy Clark, Daryl Scott, Verlin Thompson, and then the more famous ones, mainstreamy ones like Susie Boggess and Pam Tillis and Hank Jr. and Loretta Lynn even. I mean, it's so much fun. Usually those are on songs that I didn't write. So, you know, it's great that I get to work with such talented, wonderful artists to where I love the songs and I enjoy singing background as much as I do singing lead. But, you know, I really, they're all kind of close to my heart while I'm performing them. I'm just glad I'm out of that phase in my 20s, teens, 20s. When I used to sing just anything, anybody give me $50 or $100 to come sing their demos, you know, and they were just, you know, it was for the money back then. I was trying to pay the bills. And they weren't all great songs. I won't remember who wrote them, but some of them would just, like, get stuck in your head because you gotta learn it well enough to do a good job. And then you've got this piece of crap stuck in your head for the next few days. I don't think I need that $50 anymore.
Take it back. Please remove this from my mind.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Well, Susie, I really appreciate the time today. It's been great to get to know you a little better. Again, visit the website, check her out on social media as well. And Susie, hopefully we can catch up again real soon.
Yeah. Well, I really want to thank you so much for talking with me and helping me get it out there for people to hear. I just really, it's been a long career of few and far between that I'm on the radio, so I'm really appreciative of it.
All right, guys, our next guest on the podcast today is country star and also friend, James Robert Webb. And first off, James, always great to visit with you, my friend.
Hey, Cameron, it's good to be talking to you again. We're both Okies, so we got that going for
us. And this year, I think this is like the first year in a while that we haven't had the opportunity. We're on opposite ends of the state, so we actually haven't been able to travel in between much.
That's right. Oklahoma is not as big as Texas, if people aren't from this area, but it is, about 8 hours between us, Tulsa and Altus?
It's
6 hours?
Five or six, I think.
Five or six. See, all right, I got you. It seems like, maybe it seems like eight, because I can't wait to get there.
That's
I'm
right.
Impatient when I
That's
drive,
right. But. Now, James, through the whole pandemic, all that's going on, obviously it's had an effect not only on you professionally, but also personally in your regular line of work. And putting a new single out just recently, how has this differed from the singles that have been released in the past?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, the album just came out, a James Robert Webb album just came out May 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has been interesting doing this in COVID. We had delayed it because of COVID, and we decided, well, we just need to go ahead and get it out because we'd already had a couple of singles that had done well. And so this whole COVID situation has been really interesting because we have, lots of new music, but we're not able to get out and play in front of people. And I've been kind of lucky, I think, on the last two singles. I've kind of almost taken it on a different meaning in the pandemic. Because Think About It was really a song about, it was my first top 40 as a writer and artist on Billboard Country. And it's really a song that we wrote kind of just about reconnecting with the natural world and, like putting down the electronics, which is so freaky, that we released it kind of in a pandemic time because everybody's, that's about some of the only COVID-approved activities are
That's right.
going out and being in nature. And the new single, Good Time Waiting to Happen, I really feel like everybody, artists, entertainers, fans, everybody's just waiting for us to be able to go out and have a good time again. You're waiting for those concerts that have been pushed off. So it's kind of like Good Time Waiting to Happen also has a different meaning through the lens of COVID in 2020.
And you talk about getting when things open back up. How hard is it doing a Facebook? I've never had to do that. But what's it like playing to an audience that may or may not respond via message while you're playing?
That's right. I mean, it's difficult, but I think it makes you a better performer because it's a lot easier in a sold out room or even a small room with just a few people. To have that interaction, and there's something you can see the looks in people's eyes, and you can see them singing along, or you can see them tearing up, and not getting that feedback on live is a little bit different. But it's also good because some of my my Webbers can kind of watch me anyway, right? They don't have to. I don't have to be in their town for them to see me. So that part I've enjoyed the most.
And how have you been reactive through this whole COVID-19 situation? I'm just going to say for myself, at first I kind of laughed it off, but then I went in full lockdown mode and was completely protective about everything, maybe a little bit overboard. But I think I've slacked a little bit now. But what about yourself? How has it been for you?
Well, Early on, I think it's always prudent to use caution because we don't know what's going on, you know, really with something that's new. And there's always the potential. We haven't had one yet, but you never know when we're going to have some kind of engineered virus that has other effects, or you know what I mean, that we can't explain. So we pretty much went in lockdown for the most part because my mother was really ill, and then my daughters both have heart conditions and things. So mainly for that, and then plus the patients I work with tend to be older patients that are higher risk. So I pretty much stayed in lockdown because of that, just for them. But as it's gone on, we've seen, you know, the death rates are not very high. I mean, we have a lot of people that have died, which is too many, you know, over 200,000. But, you know, we see that we're not even close to the number of people that die every year from heart attacks, for example, you know, but it's a national emergency. I think our response was kind of crazy. You know, it's a big experiment to quarantine all the healthy people. And there's been a lot of doctors and scientists that have, you know, come out against that, and they're just being ignored by the media, unfortunately. So I don't, you know, I'm not too concerned. I mean, you never know. You might be in that 1.3% or whatever that die that get it. But my recommendation to everybody is to, you know, always practice good hygiene and try to stay away from, you know, people that are coughing. And especially if you're higher risk, yeah, isolate. I mean, you should probably do that a lot of times anyway.
And James, has this year bred into you some inspiration? Has it inspired you in your writing?
Yes. I mean, I think this year in 2020 has been a crazy year, right? And I've written both more and with a greater number of other artists and writers this year in a larger variety, you know, in different genres. And so you can't help but for the times to kind of feed into the songs. But yeah, there's definitely been some interesting creative leaps. And I've also taken this time really just to disappear a little bit and kind of hone my craft more. So for me, that's kind of, you know, reflecting on where I've been in this album and kind of where I want to go on the next project and things like that. And you usually don't have time to kind of sit and think about that.
Yeah, you gotta count those blessings, right?
That's right. I mean, so out of this, out of 2020, and kind of sitting back and seeing how things are going, it's you know, I've had a tremendous response with like the Western Swing version of Tulsa Time that we did on the album that was picked up and supported on Willie's Roadhouse on Sirius XM. It's I think our top three, our third highest catalog, I think, on a song on Apple Music. And I've started noticing a lot of Western Swing outlets, like there's a local NPR station has a swing program that started playing in a couple other outlets across the country, which is kind of cool. So I had in the back of my mind wanted to do a Western Swing, just like, you know, like an EP. But that's kind of solidified the idea that I think there's definitely a taste for that kind of music too. Not that I want to do that exclusively, but we're definitely going to have something like that coming out in 2021. And even though we're still, you know, we haven't got to tour this current album, we're already, you know, planning on working on new music with Buddy Cannon. So
that's cool.
Lots of things going on.
And how special was that for you on a personal level to have the opportunity to record Tulsa Time in the first place?
Yeah. Recording Tulsa Time with Buddy and the band has been, I think we recorded actually at the end of 2018. And Buddy and I both have a love of Western Swing. We kind of talked about that. You know, we both grew up, he grew up listening to some albums I think his uncle had. And I grew up in Tulsa and heard it like on KDOO. And, you know, Tulsa is the home of the Canes Ballroom where Bob Wills was forever. And so it's just kind of in the blood in Tulsa. So to be able to, we wanted to do a Western Swing song. We wanted to do a cover, and we didn't really want to do you know, one that had been done a million times. And so Buddy came up with the idea one morning. We came to the session and he handed me the lyric sheet and said, "What do you think about this?" He had a gleam in his eye. And I thought, yes, definitely. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah. I love taking songs that are well-known and kind of well-worn and maybe a little tired and spinning them 180 degrees with a different production, you know, making them new again. That was so much fun to do that, and plus to be kind of a tribute to my hometown and to the great, you know, Bob Wills tradition.
And as we get toward the end of the year, what is Thanksgiving? What does Christmas look like for you this year?
I don't know. I mean, that's kind of the big question. We're kind of part of us. I think a lot of us are just waiting until after the election to see what happens. And, you know, I think there's a good chance that after the election happens that all this COVID craziness is going to go away a little bit, regardless of who, you know, probably regardless of who wins. But I think it's been so politicized with all the virtue signaling and everything. It's just so tired of hearing that. So, but if it's, you know, if we're having, you know, a lot more increase in cases and things like that, then, you know, everybody's going to want to be doing the responsible thing. I've heard like a third of people are planning on doing a virtual, like a Zoom Thanksgiving or something. Is that what I heard?
That I know a lot of people are. Yeah.
I mean, I have three kids at home, and, you know, so we, even to ourselves, just the five of us, have a pretty good time on holidays. But, if we get, you know, it will definitely, we would probably miss seeing grandma and grandpa. So I don't think that, the grandparents are going to let that happen. So I suspect that Christmas will be with the family, as usual, although we're probably not going to be out, caroling and things like that.
There you go. Now, James, always want to make sure and let our listeners know, where they can find out about, more information about the music. Also follow you social media wise. And as, the tour dates become available, let them know about that as well.
Absolutely. The best way to find me is you can just Google or whichever search engine, James Robert Webb, and it's two B's, W-E-B-B. JamesRobertWebb.com will have my tour dates, and that's got the store on it. You can, you know, get merch and t-shirts and physical copies of the CD. But if you want to just check out the music, try to make it easy, it's all James Robert Webb, whether it's Spotify, Deezer, YouTube, Apple Music, and all the social channels are the same. YouTube is James Robert Webb, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of those. So yeah, go and check it out. If you go to the website, JamesRobertWebb.com, there's a link where you can go listen to the album, or it'll take you to your favorite store.
Well, awesome. Well, James, it is always great to visit with you, my friend. I appreciate the time, and I love the ambiance. I love the birds in the background. That's good stuff.
I was going to ask if you heard the hawks. I had about two red-tailed hawks fly by, and then I saw a peregrine falcon swoop. So I wasn't sure if you heard that. But that, yeah, that's a nice thing of beauty to be out in nature right now. The world's going on. The world keeps moving despite 2020.
That's
Thanks
right.
Thanks for having me on, Cameron.
Well, James, it's been a privilege, and always good to visit with you. Hopefully we'll catch up again real soon.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Our next guests are Aaron and Rachel Bradshaw. They're talking about Bradshaw Bunch. Check it out Thursday evenings on E! The Bradshaw Bunch, Thursday nights, 9 Eastern, 8 local time on E! And this morning, we've got Aaron and Rachel from the Bradshaw Bunch on the line with us. And first off, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Now when the Bradshaw Bunch first was idealized and brought to you, what was your initial reaction, your initial thought? Aaron, I'm going to ask you first, and then Rachel, your thoughts as well.
You know, at first when they approached us about it, you know, it's definitely a unique opportunity, you know, to have a production company want to film your life and, you know, think you're interesting and exciting enough to want to come into your world and share it with everybody. And, you know, at first it was a little scary, you know, because you're opening up your whole personal life to the world. But it's been super fun and exciting, you know, definitely something new for me that I've never done before. So, you know, it's been fun to do it. It's been a really cool journey. Hopefully we get to continue to do it for more seasons to come. But, you know, overall it was a great experience and we had a blast doing it, and hopefully we can, you know, continue it.
And Rachel, for you.
Yeah, whenever we filmed the pilot and everyone was kind of like, oh, we want to get a show. Well, that was just a fun thing we did. Then we get the show. And I was like, oh, whoa, we better buckle up. This is a really big network. And I didn't really know how everyone else was going to take it, because we haven't done anything like this before. This is a whole new can of worms. So, And then the cameras rolled, and everybody was so funny and so just not scared of the cameras, which is why the show, I think people love it, because it looks great. Everybody's just having fun.
Now, how true to life is that, and how many of the times that you were kind of cringing about, were you glad that got cut out in editing, if you will?
Aaron? Wait, I'm what parts got cut out?
Maybe the parts that got cut out that you were happy to see were not there.
Yeah, you know, I can definitely say I had a few moments where when we were done filming, I'm like, you know, I would not be opposed to them maybe trimming that down to about 5 seconds. But, you know, I will say we're a very fun, loud, obviously vibrant, open family. We're very honest. So, you know, that's kind of something that comes with the territory with us with filming. But I can definitely say we did have a few moments where you might have slipped and said something or made a comment. And there's a few episodes I watched that I thought, I'm not real sure, you know, what they're going to choose to put on this episode. And so, yeah, definitely some moments there. But overall, I mean, it's been really, really fun.
And guys, I guess, Rachel, I'll ask you, were you ever worried whenever the idea was approached? Because Terry being the huge name and the popular figure that he is, about tarnishing that with a reality, was that ever a concern?
Are you asking about how this came about?
Well, I'm just asking if with reality shows, you know, one off word can ruin a reality star. And with Terry having the following that he has, I just wonder if that was ever a concern.
Yeah, you know, Dad, man, he has a mouth on him. So there are a few things that I'm like, why would you say that? And then our producer, Jason Ehrlich, who we love, we trust him, he would just shake his head. He's like, oh, dear God. I mean, like, so I know that they have our backs, and so they're not going to put anything in the show that would maybe rub someone the wrong way. But, you know, I think that's a common fear when you're doing reality. You do not find the day, what are they going to edit? What do I look like? I mean, that one word, could that be twisted? And so it's a genuine concern.
And as new episodes are upcoming, Aaron, I want to ask you what the listeners can look forward to in the coming episodes.
Well, you can definitely look forward to my dad eating a worm. That's definitely coming up on tonight's episode. We have a lot of more fun things coming up. We've got, we share a little insight into my dad's house being haunted, which I will tell everyone listening that his house is haunted. So it's not fabricated. It's very real. It's been going on for years now. It's kind of become a joke with us. And, you know, aside from laughs, you know, you'll see a sentimental side of us as well, a little bit more towards the end that kind of opens up a little bit more into our personal lives and things that, you know, we might have going on or want to achieve in our future. So I'd say, you know, a lot of laughs coming up, a lot of fun things, and then some serious sides to us as well.
And Rachel, in the pandemic that we've been dealing with, obviously so much heaviness, to be able to put a smile on somebody's face, maybe brighten their day a little bit. I mean, I know that's got to be the icing on the cake, right?
You know, when COVID hit, the world was shut down. I was talking to my dad and he's like, you know, what a weird thing. We filmed this show. We're the only show right now that is going to continue filming. And then we're going to air during a really horrible time. It's going to bring a lot of joy to people. And he's like, I truly believe that we were meant to make the show. And I was like, wow, that's a really good perspective on it, because what a great way to come back to TV when everyone's been really deprived of new stuff and come out with just fun, wholesome show that makes people happy. It's a great feeling.
There you go. And again, new episodes Thursdays, 9 Eastern, 8 local time on E! The Bradshaw Bunch. And we've got Aaron and Rachel on the line this morning. Guys, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show, and looking forward to new episodes.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. And I hope everyone enjoys tonight's episode and enjoys the rest of season one. It was a pleasure to be on here with you guys this morning.
Yes, thank you.
All right. You guys have a great rest of your week.
You too.
All right, guys, we've got another very special guest here on the podcast, and comedy writer, comedy legend, I would like to say, Bruce Valanche. And I know he patting his back over there, I'm sure, right, Bruce?
If I could reach that, I would. Then I would have another career if I could do that.
That's right. Now, Bruce, the pandemic, what kind of effect has that had on the writing, or has it helped your comedy stylings a little bit?
No, it hasn't helped comedy the comedy stylings. Because you're basically creating stuff that may, if you're doing stuff about the pandemic, you don't know what the shelf life is on that. Although I have a feeling that this has been so seismic that it's like writing about World War II. You know, I mean, it's not going to go away. There will be telling stories about this for a long time. And in fact, I wrote a musical on a PPP grant for a theater company in Florida, and hopefully we'll get it up in the spring. But it's about a guy who was sheltering in his parents' attic, and his intimate connection with his imaginary friend Dolly Parton. But it's full of stuff about, I mean, it wouldn't exist were there not a pandemic. Where our hope is that by the time it gets performed, there'll be a certain nostalgia factor. but it doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime soon. I mean, the whole world has become dismantled, so it's truly a cataclysmic event. But what I'll say this, I mean, humbly, I will say that writers can continue to, I mean, writing is one of the great things you can do without pants.
That's right.
And everybody's doing everything without pants these days. So it's you can write, you can get paid, and you can conduct a semblance of a normal life as long as your Wi-Fi connection holds out. So I've been hunkered down in my Hollywood man cave, reading, writing, streaming, Zooming, and falling in love all over again with porn stars long dead.
I
suspect there's like a lot of, even in Oklahoma, I think that's happening.
You're right. And Bruce, for you, where did the comedy originate for you? Was it, I'll just let you expound on that.
I looked in the mirror and I thought, well, that's funny. And I started making faces, and I don't know, I guess it was something in the DNA. It was, who knows where it comes from. I know I was, I had very supportive, nurturing parents who recognized that I was happier when I was performing. So they encouraged it. They just had an innate fear that I couldn't make a living at it. So they were always encouraging the writing as what they used to call a fallback. And you have a fallback. And I said, you know, you should write for a newspaper. They'll never go out of style. I thought, who knew?
That's for sure.
But so I was lucky in that regard. And my mother was starstruck and stage struck. And she, you know, it wasn't like Mama Rose. I mean, I wasn't having the career she wanted to have. But she loved the idea that I was in show business, even as a kid. I mean, they didn't push me into it. I liked doing it. They had me, I acted as a kid. I was a child actor. I was never a child star, or we'd be having this conversation in rehab. I was a child actor. But only because I enjoyed it. They weren't making a living off of it, and they were putting it all away for the, you know, college. And so it was a great thing. And my mother's side of the family was very theatrical. I had an uncle, a great uncle, who was a Catskills comic. He wasn't a successful Catskills comic, but he was a Catskills comic. And they were all characters. They were each and every one of them a character. And, you know, I intend on writing about them someday before it all goes away. But I didn't use them the way David Sedaris has taken his family and made an empire out of it. And I think I'm kind of a schmuck for not doing that. But I had other things I was doing, so. There you go, and he's brilliant. So,
now what is your favorite type of writing? Is it the shows, the scripts? Where do you get the most enjoyment from sharing your thoughts on paper?
Well, I suppose I get the most enjoyment you get is the visceral enjoyment is when you write something that gets performed, and in my life, it has mostly been stuff I've written for other people to perform in their shows as themselves or as characters they've created, or I get to see stuff done on television right away, as opposed to playwrights or screenwriters who create in a vacuum and then watch eventually as the thing happens. So it's almost as good as the rush you get when you're performing and people are reacting. So I guess it's that kind of writing, but there's another whole pleasure that you get when you're in what I call the alpha state, when you're writing something, if it's fiction, where the characters sort of take you over, and it's, you know, like even a fat guy like me forgets to eat because you're so wound up in what you're writing that you kind of shut the world out. And that's a similar thing that happens to performers before they go on, where they have to just focus down. You know, I love all these stories about stars where they say, well, we were told not to look them in the eye. And you know, that's basically because you're working and they're working, and their work involves summoning up all the stuff that they have to do to project whatever it is in front of the camera or on stage. And you're interrupting that if you're busy trying to make a connection with them. So save that for after.
Now, do you find yourself, whenever you're deep in a writing process, I mean, how long is there, is it kind of like running where you get to a place where you're just like, I don't think I can stop this pleasurably?
We want to, you know, it's you're just having such a good time. But that's why we have unions. And they say, you can keep doing this, but you're going in the golden time. So, which is time and a half, or even worse. I mean, it may be double time. Depends on the union.
And how has demand for writers changed as a result of, well, 2020?
The demand? Well, as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of stuff is being developed because it's something that can happen, because you can sit there with no pants and do it, as opposed to acting, getting up on a set and facing somebody without a mask. That's more complicated. The writing is what it always was. The difference is when you do any kind of group work, which is what happens a lot in television comedy, and in movie comedy too, for that matter, everybody gets into a room and rewrites something together. That happens on Zoom. It's not as much fun on Zoom, but again, you don't have to wear pants.
That is right.
So you make your own fun.
Now, when you're dealing with that, how does the feeling in a writing session change whenever you are remote? I mean, obviously, you don't have the feeling of being in the room,
there's a difference. Mm-hmm. You don't feel the same energy. I mean, when you're in a collaboration with somebody and you're physically there, there are many more physical cues you're giving to each other. Plus, you are, you know, you really are working as a kind of an audience at the same time, and there's no delay. On Zoom, there's always that little delay, which kills the joke. It's hard a lot of time, you know, to do stuff exactly right. But I mean, it's not so bad in the writing sessions. It's when you perform stuff on Zoom that you don't. It's everything is very flat. You know, you don't get any kind of real reaction. So I've stopped watching those things, Zoom play readings and stuff. I've done a couple because we had to as part of the deal, but. You know, generally, if you have an audience that's watching you on Zoom, right, and if you don't want to hear sirens going in the background or babies crying or people farting, you ask them to mute their their microphone. But then you don't hear the laughs.
That's right.
So, I mean, you're trading off something, you know, a fabulous joke getting stepped on by somebody's cat suddenly deciding to meow, or you play it into a void because you see them laughing, but you can't hear them. And there is a difference.
And I know I've talked to several stand-up comics that have thought and a couple that have actually attempted the Facebook Lives, and I can't imagine how painful that must be to deliver the joke and not be able to hear the laughter back, kind of like you were talking about.
It's crazy. It's like it's permanent crickets. Yeah, I mean, as I say, you can look at the screen, you can see them, you know, they could be holding their sides, and that's nice, but it's not the same as being in the room with them.
So
you know, listen, when you work on movies, it's similar because it's the crew, you know, the crew are the only ones who were there to laugh, and so it's. Hang on, I'm sorry, I was interrupted by, see, this is what it's like. Somebody delivering something, and it's crazy. Anyway.
Being a spokesperson and also being out there, I know it's been for the LGBTQ community, and I know with the virtual Pride Parade that went on earlier this year and being involved in that, do you think acceptance is better now than when you came in and... I guess
since
that's my biggest question.
Came out.
Since you came into the business and came out, that's what I was saying.
Of course, acceptance is. I mean, we're married now. I mean, we were a part of the mainstream of American society, unless, of course, this the new Supreme Court decides to relook at it. But it's. I mean, it's settled. It's settled law, but also it's settled life. I mean, people are no longer living on the fringe. They're no longer outlaws, and they're part of the world. But that doesn't mean that there's total acceptance. You know, I mean, it's the same. Black people have the same situation. They're part of everything legally too, but it doesn't mean they're totally accepted by white people. So it's the same thing with gay people. It's we have what we were trying to get legally, and our civil rights doesn't mean that every straight person accepts us. But what are you going to do? I'm also Jewish, and a lot of people hate us. So, you know, you grow up in Jewish and you say, a lot of people hate us. A lot of people are going to hurt us. We have to take care of ourselves. And that's the same thing with gay people. It's a good mantra. You must take care of yourself. What can I tell you? The other Jewish mantra is, they tried to kill us, they lost, let's eat.
That's right.
Every Jewish holiday can be described in those three lines.
And Bruce, speaking of the holidays, I mean, how much different are the holidays going to look this year? I mean, Black Friday may actually be survivable this year around, right?
I think they've moved Black Friday up, actually. Well, you know, Amazon may have destroyed Black Friday with Prime, whatever the Prime Day.
Prime Day, right.
The 13th and 14th. I'm not giving Jeff Bezos a plug, but I have to say, they're the 13th and the 14th. If you can get onto their website, that will be like the Black Friday of the Internet. Although, Black Friday on the Internet's been big, too, and so big that there's Cyber Monday, which is the Monday after Thanksgiving where people return things or people order stuff that's suddenly on sale, or they realize Christmas is coming. I don't think it will. Obviously, there will be a physical difference. It's hard to tell because I live in L.A. and we're much more still on lockdown than a lot of other places. Mm-hmm. You know, people are going to the movies. There's nothing to see. I mean, they went to see Hocus Pocus last weekend. I mean, there's nothing to see, but people elsewhere are living different lives than people in California are living because we're taking it seriously. What can I tell you?
Now, Bruce, if folks want to keep up with your writing and appearances, whenever that does become available as well, where can folks find all the information about Bruce Valanche?
You could go to wegotbruce.com. Which is named after a movie that was made about me 20 years ago called Get Bruce, which was produced by Harvey Weinstein, who never laid a hand on me. Really, hashtag why not me?
That's awesome.
And I keep saying I'm working on the sequel, Had Bruce, with a much larger cast. but We Got Bruce, it's run by a fan in Pensacola, Florida, and... and he knows more about what I'm doing than I do. I'll get these emails from him saying, I hear you're doing such and such. And I said, which is news to me. But so if anybody has a morbid interest, they can go right there and they'll find stuff out right away.
Well, that's good stuff. And Bruce, it's truly been a privilege to visit with you. I appreciate you taking some time to be on, and hopefully we can catch up again as things loosen up a little bit.
Enjoy. Alice, Oklahoma, is that really, but not spelled like the girl?
It's Altus.
Oh, pardon me, Altus. Yeah, I've got to get this prescription corrected. I'm telling you. These Walgreens glasses are not doing it for me. No offense, Walgreens. Keep selling me drugs.
Well, thanks again for tuning us in for this 29th episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, question, anything else you'd like to know, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and on Facebook, all at GQ with Cam. If you'd like to help out with the funding for the podcast, feel free to click the support tab and follow the instructions. Also, if you have any special guest ideas, send me an email, cameron@kwhw.com. We'll see you for episode 30 coming up tomorrow.